C2SP. Number 14A.
Well, we have started with the third part, and as one usually goes into more detail, one can lose the overall view. So I just quickly recapitulate those first three main subjects with the subtones. We have seen the third part shows us the way of spiritualization, so that the final point will be that man will spiritualize to the to its final state of seeing man as the reflection of God. This would free us naturally from all the claims of spiritualism. So even if the term spiritualism is not mentioned very often in the third part, naturally it is all a question of getting away from spiritualism, because if we have the subject of final spiritualization, that means that spiritualism is reduced to nothing. Now, the steps that are shown here are, and that we have taken, were mind, spirit, and soul. First, showing what can we do or what is our method for spiritualization. The subject of mind said, well, first of all, we have to open our thought and to make it wide so that we can, that we are able to receive a new idea. So that at the very outset, she would say that we have to admit right from the beginning the final state, namely that to admit that man is God's own likeness. That's the tone of mind as mind, first to open our thought, so to see that man is God's own like. This, she says in the subtone of spirit, that this is the right point of departure for spiritual growth. This opens up the door towards spiritualization, and then says, then, in the third subtone, then man in God's likeness will appear. So we have first that law of mind that says, open your thought. Then you will be able to reach the goal. Then we had that second subject, main subject of spirit, which was saying that in order to spiritualize, we must deny material selfhood. So she presents that also in those three subtones, namely as mind and spirit and as soul, just showing first how, what shall we deny? It says in the first point, well, that we should deny really material selfhood in order that we can recognize the spiritual facts of being. In the second subtone, spirit says, therefore deny spiritualism, namely that life, intelligence, and substance is in spirit. And third, it says, deny that mind, God, can be in something. So in these three subtones of spirit, she handles really the fundamental claims of spiritualism. Then we came to the main tone of soul, where we had seen that soul is that which handles sin, which handles the serpent, which really handles the knowledge of good and evil, so that the third point is that spiritualism becomes a possibility if we reject the serpent's whisper. How do we do that? In the first subtone of mind, she would show that we do it by seeing and rejecting really the knowledge of good and evil. That's our starting point, just as in the Bible it was a starting point to reject, to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That we should actually derive everything from mind. Then in spirit, she showed that we must reject the belief that evil is superior to good. That's another belief. Then the third belief we have to reject is that soul cannot control the body, that the time has not come that we can control the body through soul and therefore have to leave it at the mercy of spiritualism. And she says, now the time has come that we can recognize and demonstrate that soul controls the body. Then we have to refute the fourth point, namely that divine logic and revelation is not true, that we have to gain our knowledge from the five physical senses. So we have to refute the belief that revelation and divine logic can give us an understanding of truth. And then fifth, she would show that we have to refute the belief that good can be destructive, namely that good can really cause an evil mind. So life says, no, that is not possible. The divine essence, the divine being, is always good and can cause not a destructive element. So here you have in these three and then five subtone, one rule after the other that shows us what our attitude should be. So if we know the synonymous term, at least we can always remember the main tones, the main epitomes. How can we spiritualize? We can spiritualize through mind, namely by opening up our consciousness to recognize our prime evil existence, then deny material selfhood, the second main tone, and the third main tone, to reject really sin or the serpent's suggestion of dualism. Then at that point we come to principle, and there again we get another rule how to spiritualize. Principle says that spiritualization demands that we should reason scientifically from God so as to arrive at the spiritual concept of man. It is a statement that is natural to us, that we say we can never find the true man, the spiritual man, the spiritualized man, if we do not reason or not deduce from God. If we start out from another basis than the divine principle, then we are not reasoning scientifically and we never really get the true answer. So principle is always that which says that principle must interpret anything. So here it interprets what man is. The first subtone here is a very interesting one for us, especially. I have epitomized here in Christian Science, we recognize. See, the moment we have recognition, apprehension, it's always mind. It's activity of mind, an intelligent activity of mind. We recognize that man is not quantitatively, but qualitatively derived from God. So that man is not the quantitative derivative of God, but only a qualitative derivative of God. So that man is never God, but always reflects God. Also, a point that is known to us, that we are familiar with, but she brings up a few points that are of interest for us. The side note is derivatives of spirit, and spirit there is with a small s, and she talks around these derivatives of spirit with a small s, namely the belief that spirit, capital S, is finite as well as infinite. Well, we have seen this is the belief of spiritualism that was pointed out in the first part. So she doesn't have to repeat, this is the belief of spiritualism, or spiritualism believes this and this. She can now put it into abstract sentences and says, that spiritualism is the belief that spirit is finite and at the same time infinite. And this consciousness, this belief, has darkened all history. And we see, instead of having the light of mind, instead of really seeing through a situation, it has darkened our vision. So you have here the subtone of mind. In Christian Science, spirit, as a proper noun, is the name of the Supreme Being. So spiritual, capitalized, stands for God, the Supreme Being. And it means quantity and quality, and applies exclusively to God. So we see that spirit, the moment we capitalize it, is always referred to God, stands for another term for God, is a synonymous term for God, so it applies exclusively to God. The modifying derivatives, so if I have derivatives of spirit, of the word spirit, small s, refer only to quality, not to God. So it refers to quality, namely to being spiritual. That's a quality of spirit, to be spiritual. And this is the quality and not the quantity. So man is spiritual, you see. He's only qualitatively as big as God. He's not quantitatively as big as God. That's why man is not a synonymous term for God. Spiritual is a derivative, a qualitative derivative. So man is spiritual. He is not God's spirit. And you see how she reasons step by step very logically. So he is not spirit. So she does away with that man is a spirit and is spirit. If man were spirit, capital S, if he were God, then man, in the plural, would be spirits, gods. That's natural. Then they would be spirits, they would be gods. So finite spirit then would be mortal, and this is the error embodied in the belief that the infinite can be contained in the finite. So this is the answer to the first sentence on line 21, that God's spirit is both, that it is infinite and that it is finite. So bringing out that this is a belief of finite spirit, therefore spiritualism. This belief tends to becloud, again you have beclouding, darkened history, beclouds our apprehension, that's the counterfeit of mind, of the kingdom of heaven and of the reign of harmony in the science of being. We can never see this is all kingdom of heaven, the reign of harmony, the signs of being, all indicates principle. We know principle, that stands for the ideas of science, that stands for the idea of the kingdom of heaven, that stands for the reign of harmony in the signs of being. So it beclouds really the nature of God, principle. If we are not reasoning correctly in a deductive way, if we deduct from spirit that man, the outcome of spirit, is also spirit, capital P, then capital S, then we have reasoned wrongly. That is not divine logic, and that is not revelation. Now, I said this is an interesting point, because we know from experience that the students of Christian Science, even if they are of long standing, that they always have difficulty with capitalization. That when they write something or transcribe something which has been spoken and they have to put it into writing, that their sense of capitalization is not always too good. And that we see constantly. or if they write something, or write a letter or so, or write a little note or an article or so, the capitalization is always a bit lacking. So how can we know how to capitalize rightly? Now, you know that there is an article in Miscellany called Capitalization, where Mrs. Eddy says that only then, when a student really is mastering the capitalization, that only then really he is understanding the subject. The moment he begins to show forth a wrong capitalization, one understands that he hasn't quite got it. What is the criterion for capitalization? Well, a capitalized term always stands for God. That's very clear and easy. It always stands for God. It is always quantity and quality. Always quantity and quality. Therefore, the moment you come to a term like mind, spirit, soul, or life, truth, and love, you have to ask yourself first, do I mean quality or do I mean quantity as well? If it is not quantity, then you don't capitalize it. So if you talk about that we demonstrate the newness of life, then you have to ask yourself what you mean with life. Do you demonstrate your individual newness of life? Then it is a quality. Then you don't demonstrate the whole quantity of God, and so you don't capitalize it. But if you talk about the newness of life, meaning the newness that God constantly gives to you, then you capitalize it. So the same term, life, can be either used as capital or as not capitalized with lowercase, but both renderings mean something different. Though not both, both renderings spoken doesn't seem to be the same, but when you write them, you can decide what you mean. And according to the meaning, you capitalize. So only you ask yourself always, do I mean with a term that I capitalize, really, do I mean the whole quantity of God, the wholeness of God, or not? Now, this is a difficulty that you hardly encounter with the term mind, spirit, soul. There usually there is not a great difficulty to distinguish it. Usually you capitalize mind because you mean God, the mind of God. You don't capitalize mind when you know you speak about the human mind. And so it is with spirit. The moment we mean with spirit, really God, and not just the spirit. Spirit of Christianity, or the spirit of the situation, or the spirit of Christ, then naturally you don't mean the whole of spirit, but only a quality of spirit, and you write it in lower case. So the spirit of Christianity, you see, is an adjective, it's a qualifying, so to say, Christianity, and because Christianity is anyway capitalized, you cannot have a spirit of Christianity and capitalize that spirit, because it's only a qualitative expression of a capitalized term. And so usually you have no difficulty with the synonymous term soul. The moment you think about the soul of man and talk about that, then you can see at once that the soul of man is not the soul of God, and therefore it's not capitalized. But the moment you speak about soul, mean the whole of God, the quantity of soul, the one soul, then naturally you capitalize it. With principle, it's usually also very easy. There is one principle, and the moment we call God principle, it's capitalized. But the moment we use principle of something, the principle of arithmetic or so, naturally it's a small p, or what can we say, the principle of relationship or anything, then it is usually with a small p, except that you want to show that God is the principle of something. But then, when we come to life, truth, and love, then it becomes more difficult, because those three terms have a very positive connotation also when they are written in lowercase. Life is something very positive, and therefore spiritual life, our spiritual life, can be a small L, but it also can be a capital L. Or you speak about truth with a capital T, but we also can speak about truth with a small t. And so we can speak about love with a capital L, but also about love with a small l. When do we use the one? When do we use the other? And there, mostly, you just can answer that by asking yourself, do I want to bring out the quantity of life, the quantity of truth, the quantity of love? Then you write it with a capital, because then you mean God. But when we want to express individualized life, then it is a small L, because it's individualized, so it is a quality, and no more the whole of God. Therefore, we can use life with a small L in a positive sense. And so we talk about truth. Very often the textbook talks about truth with a small t. When we talk, for instance, when I say, well, this is a spiritual truth. The moment I say this, I qualify it as a quality and not as a quantity. And so I would say, this is a spiritual truth. I must write truth with a small t, because it's not the whole of truth. This is individualized. So it is with love. Love is only capitalized when it really means the love of God. God, loving love. Then you naturally have love as a capitalized sense. But when you speak about man's love for God, then it is man's love and not God as love. And so it is a quality of man, and therefore it's not capitalized. So in life, truth, and love, you have to be a bit more careful than perhaps with mind, spirit, soul, and principle, where the difficulties do not arise so much. Therefore, you will see that Mrs. Eddy would, in the textbook itself, sometimes use the same rendering if we hear it, and at one point she would then use a capitalized term, and in another passage would use the same rendering with an uncapitalized term. For instance, you can state, life demonstrates life. There you must really capitalize the first life, because only God, life, can demonstrate life. We cannot demonstrate life. So life demonstrates life. But the second life, you can either write in a small L or with a capital L. But in both cases, you mean something different. Or in each case, you mean something different. The moment we are saying life demonstrates life, capital L, then our thought is on the level of science, on divine science, science itself, that says life, God, can demonstrate nothing else but itself, namely life. It cannot demonstrate something different than itself. Then the second life is capitalized. But when we say, well, life demonstrates life, and we mean, without saying it, and we mean that life, God, demonstrates my life, demonstrates the life of man, then naturally the second L is a small L, because it's individualized. Can you see that? The moment it's individualized, it's small L. The moment it refers to the whole of God, it's capitalized. So the author must know what he wants to bring out. That he says, do I want to bring out that God, life, demonstrates the life of man and shortens it and says life demonstrates life, then the second life must be a small L. But if I want to, and that naturally would be on the level of absolute Christian science or Christian science, whereas on the level of science and divine science, we would say life demonstrates itself, namely life demonstrates life, both are capital. Another difficulty where the author, so to say, must decide what he really wants to bring out through his writing is usually with the term being. There are only a few instances in the textbook where being is capitalized. Usually being is a small b. When does she use being capitalized? When not capitalized? Well, the moment she wants to speak about the whole of God as the one being, as the infinite being, then naturally it's capitalized. But the moment she wants to speak about the beingness of being, so to say, our being, then naturally it is a small b. For instance, the 10th chapter is the science of being with a small b. Naturally, because it is a title, it's written in a capital B, because all the first terms in the title are capitalized. But actually, that 10th chapter is the science of being small b, because what Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out is not that she wants to show the science of God as being. She wants to show that it's the science of the beingness of ideas, the beingness of the universe, including man. So it is a science of being small b. So again, the author has to decide what he wants to present.